Welcome to Conversations with Marius Dosinescu. On this podcast, I sit down and interview the top SEO and e-commerce experts to bring you the latest insights and strategies for improving your online presence. Whether you're just starting out in the world of SEO or you're seasoned pro looking to stay up to date on the latest trends, this is the podcast for you. So, if you're ready to take your website to the next level and learn from the best in the industry, be sure to subscribe to Conversations with Marius Dosinescu. You can find us on aisa.ai, where you'll also find a wealth of useful information and amazing podcasts to help you grow your online business. Hello, everybody. Hello, Tudor. So, welcome to the latest episode of Conversation with Marius Dosinescu, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the world of SEO, e-commerce, and AI, of course. Today, we have a special guest, Tudor Galoș, the best GDPR expert I know. of course. With a lot of years of experience in the industry, he is a true expert for a lot of industry verticals in terms of GDPR. And the subject today is how GDPR is impacting AI or the other way around. And of course, SEO. So let's get started. Welcome, Tudor.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Marius. Thank you for inviting me in your cool podcast.
Yeah, it's just at the beginning, but I'm trying to approach subjects that I'm interested in. So also, I think a lot of people are interested about this subject, GDPR and AI. So I think it will be a very, very interesting podcast. First of all, let's start with a few things about you and about your experience in this field.
So I'm working in a company. I wouldn't say leading. I'm actually working in a consulting company, boutique consulting company, Galoș Consulting. Together with my colleagues, we are delivering GDPR compliance projects at our customers. We work with over 150 customers across Europe, the United States, United Kingdom, and the Middle East.
Amazing. And, what's the name? What's the name of the company?
Because Tudor Galoș Consulting. So after my name, I was actually
very, very modest.
Yes. No, it was a lack of imagination, let's say. And anyway, we gathered the team. Now we are working in multinational projects. What we are doing? We are doing basically compliance 360, let's say. So we are auditing companies. We are doing the gap analysis. We are identifying risks. And we are proposing technical and organizational measures to address all risks. We are doing data protection impact assessment. We are doing training, we are doing procedures and policies and recommendations. We are doing privacy notices and, of course, data breach management, including escalation to relevant authorities. Of course, we are doing due diligence for companies who want to purchase other companies or who want to invest in other companies. And as well, we are working with a lot of startups who want to receive investment in terms of addressing all GDPR risks and doing what is right in order to increase the value of the company. Because every liability in the end directly affects the value of the company. So it's all about money here and investments. And especially in these days, it's really super important to not only be compliant, but actually understand how GDPR helps you receive more money, improve your cash workflow, and actually improve your finances, including profits.
I can confirm, Tudor. I was a client of Tudor's and his company, and I can say after we discussed and after we implemented all the procedures and everything, I slept better. So I felt prepared for the meeting with data protection. So congratulations. It was like a sleeping pill for me.
Thank you. Peace of mind as a service.
Yeah. So
In the end, everybody, we assume that everybody knows about GDPR, but let's start a little bit in the beginning. What's GDPR and how this impacts the companies, and of course, what is the area they are impacting?
So GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation, it's an European Union regulation which entered into force on May 25th, 2018, so almost 5 years ago. European Union has two sets of legislations, let's say. One is directives and the other one is regulations. Directive is a law which is approved by the European Parliament and needs to be adopted by every country, but each country has a number of years to adopt it, to localize it, let's say, to adapt it to the local legislation, while the regulation is much tougher. So the regulation just enters into force at a certain date. It's the same in every country. What every country can do is use some local legislation to translate into the local legislation certain specifications of GDPR. Like, for example, the age of minors when a parent needs to provide consent on behalf of the minor, of the child. Basically, every country can decide between the age of 13 and 16. By the age of which the parent needs to provide consent on behalf of the minor. And some other, let's say, local flavors in terms of how and what are the cases where data protection impact assessment needs to be done, local specifications related to certain fines which should be given to the local authorities or public agencies, so state-owned agencies and so on. But that's the only level of independence that the country has in terms of the regulation. So regulation becomes something really, really important, so it shows how important data protection is. In these 5 years, we have numerous investigations performed by the data protection authorities.
That's one question I wanted to ask you about. What are the fines that actually they're already 5 years now? So yes, what are the top fines in the GDPR?
Well, the top fines, as expected, were given, however late, to big ad tech players, so the players in the online advertising industry, such as Facebook and Google and Amazon and now Apple recently. This is happening especially due to the fact that many of these companies abuse their customers, and this is the right word, abuse from the perspective of how they were using their personal data. And only now, basically, after a long legal battle, Meta, for example, was fined 10 times higher than the initial fine which was given by the Data Protection Commissioner in Ireland. Now the European Data Protection Board asked DPC to increase the fine 10 times and also make it mandatory for Meta, which is the parent of Facebook, to actually put their business in order and stop doing the illegal things they were doing to their customers, such as basically monitoring their behavior without them knowing, using some small legal escapes to actually process their data, such as contractual obligation, which is not okay. And things like these. But these days, those were, let's say, the biggest fines. The next fines were related to data breaches, really big data breaches that happened, and many companies such as Uber, Marriott, British Airways, and so on. And the other ones were the other big fines, which are given in Spain and France, especially, were related to the fact that certain companies, especially in the financial sector, used what is called dark patterns to trick users or to tell them everything about how they were processing their personal data. So the lack of transparency and data protection by design and by default, they didn't respect these important principles. That's really key to understand what they were doing wrong in order to avoid actually receiving not only a fine, but also some really tough corrective measures.
So can you tell us that if the fines were, I mean, were they doing this intentionally, or they didn't know how to implement the GDPR rules? I mean, it's very interesting. It's a question that I had in mind.
It's both. So it's also related to the business behaviors. For example, Meta and Facebook, they said, we are putting apart a number of billions of dollars for privacy fines, meaning they knew that they were doing something wrong. And when you put this money aside, means you know you'll be fine. So, but the main thing to understand here is that the fine is not the worst thing that can happen to you. And this was learned the hard way by a mobile operator in Italy, which not only received a big fine of many millions of euros, but received the corrective measure that they had to delete the entire database of marketing persons, basically delete everything they knew about their Italian customers, because they collected the data illegally. So when you're looking into perspective, yeah, the fine, you need to pay the fine, but for example, if you serve that money in the bank, okay, you expected it to pay. However, you didn't expect the authorities to ask you to delete your database, which is the lifeline to you. It's really, you are monetizing that database. It's really important for your cash flow, for your invoices. And suddenly you are left without the database. You only have, let's say, the database of your customers that you invoice, but you don't know anything about their behavior. You don't know anything about, you cannot send them notifications. You cannot send them emails anymore. So suddenly you are drawn back 2 or 3 years of work are actually thrown away. And not only for them, but also for some big retailers, they received the same reprimands and corrective measures that they had to implement. So this is why the fine is not, let's say, the worst thing that can happen to you, because many said, and yes, they were right. Yeah, the fines were not big enough. They were not be as big as GDPR allowed them to be. However, the corrective measures are much more impactful than.
Yeah, very, very interesting. As a short note, do you consider GDPR to be a good thing, a bad thing, a necessary thing? Just short, what do you think about this?
Well, I'm biased because my business is around privacy, but we are not only working with GDPR, but with many other regulations and laws around across Europe and across the globe. It's a necessary thing. The good thing about GDPR is that it's a beacon for other countries to adopt and to get inspired when designing new laws. For example, in the United States, there is a bipartisan act at this point. It's a federal act, a federal bill, which will go through the Congress. Hopefully now that there is a Speaker Congress, we'll see this legislation discussed, modified, and finally adopted. So it would be the first privacy legislation in the United States federal legislation. But till then, we have many other states which already adopted privacy acts, like California, which is the toughest, New York, which is also tough, and Virginia. We have very many, many states who already adopted privacy legislation, which are very close to GDPR. Also, we are seeing new legislations appearing in Africa, by the way. So in the African continent, a lot of countries adopted privacy legislations, which are really close to GDPR. And there are discussions also in countries like Turkey, India, Russia. Before the war, they made some modifications, but now, of course, you cannot transfer data to you shouldn't transfer personal data to Russia. China did some interesting approach related to their privacy legislation, meaning actually, if you want to process personal data of Chinese people, and if you want to export data from China, you need to do a lot of paperwork and declarations because they want to protect the lives.
So in the end, it's a very good thing. It's necessary.
It is a good thing. It was necessary. What needs to be done now is to update it, because a lot of things changed. We have a lot of best practices. We have a lot of knowledge. So now we must make it even more efficient. I wouldn't say tougher, but more efficient. Because many companies mistakenly believe that GDPR is about consent and about doing consent dialogues on websites, which is not, it's not what GDPR is about. I mean, and we've seen this, especially in the ad tech industry, where, for example, European Data Protection Board, but the movement started from the Belgian Data Protection Authority, invalidated the model which is used by all ad tech players, so or by most of them, which is called TCF2.0, Trusted Consent Framework, which was proposed by the Internet Advisor, Internet Advertising Advisory Board, and which was invalidated. So basically, the whole ad tech industry at this point is at fault. This is why you need to update the legislation, because you need, first of all, to see how you treat these cases. The industry changed a lot. We have privacy-first browsers, privacy-first applications, approaches like the app, what Apple did, that created a lot of trouble for Facebook and Meta. Basically, they are filtering all personal data which is sent to application providers. So the user must provide consent firsthand before the data is exported and so forth and so on. But things changed a lot. So the legislation should be updated as well.
Okay. As you know, my new business is Aissa.ai. It's a SEO automation platform for e-commerce industry. Of course, I love e-commerce. I love SEO. What can I do? I can combine those two. But today's discussion is related to how GDPR is impacting AI or the other way around. So my first question is, how does GDPR apply to personal data used in AI algorithms and models?
So, really good question. Clearly, AI—it's a very nice buzzword these days, especially now that we've seen what ChatGPT can do, what DALL-E, the AI-based image creator, can do. So, we see a lot of examples where AI is used a lot, but not every application is AI. This is the first thing that we need to understand. Why do I want to emphasize this is that I see a lot of companies saying, hey, we have an AI-based application or AI-based solution, but it's not really AI-based. And many companies are using the buzzword AI, which is wrong, because actually at this point on how AI is working, if you put into an AI algorithm personal data as inputs, at some point, the AI algorithm will discriminate people. And this is, how should I say, this is an immutable law at this point. The reason being that AI has no finish. AI at this point, you need to teach algorithms about things like ethics, things like empathy, because algorithms don't have ethics. So, for example, when you're looking at let's say you want to use an algorithm to predict, for example, and this is one of the best examples, which where things went wrong, where you can predict that based on a inmate, so on the criminal record of a person, to predict whether that person will commit a crime or not. What do you take into consideration? And this is really, really tough in the United States, because they use such algorithms and they discriminated immediately. Basically, they said that all people of color are clearly most likely to become to go back to prison, while people, white Caucasian people, are very likely not to go back to prison. And this was wrong, because the algorithm missed something really important, but it wasn't the algorithm. It was basically the people who inputted data into the algorithm, because they provided only contextual data. Okay, so basically they looked at the file of that person, they looked at their race. So the algorithm learned that based on statistical data in the background, if that person is from a certain race, clearly that person will fall into this category. So this is what AI algorithms do. This is how they work. Okay. So at some point, they discriminate. So whenever you input personal data into an algorithm, in order not to discriminate, you actually need to carefully choose the data. And in AI, you have several mechanisms or what is called PETs, privacy enhancing technologies, especially for AI, where that needs to be applied in order, for example, to make sure that the algorithms are processing the relevant amount of personal data, including the context of the personal data, such as the fact that if that person, for example, comes from a certain neighborhood or from a certain area where people are most likely to do crimes, it doesn't matter the race of that person because it's in the context, okay? But if that person, let's say, is coming from a neighborhood or from an area where criminality is low, it's most likely that that person will not do a crime again. And this is a simple example of failed context. That context was missed, so the algorithm learned on the data they were provided and came to the wrong conclusion. I also seen some really bad examples of using AI, and this was, I think, in UK. They used like automatic decisions for online interviews, meaning they were talking to the to a candidate. I mean, HR people, recruiters were talking to a candidate, like the two of us are discussing right now. And you see that we are moving our faces, we are moving our eyes, we are moving our lips, we are moving all our facial muscles. So this is an algorithm that theoretically detected when a person was lying. So that's a problem. Okay, why is this such a problem? Because they used some specific cases of people who are lying to teach the algorithm that if a person does some certain facial movements, clearly that person is lying. Okay, but what if that person has a problem with the facial muscle? What if they have a nervous disorder? What if they are from a certain culture that expresses their emotions differently than we do? What if it is a person of color? What if it's coming from a different, let's say, a background from the than the person that were used to train the algorithm? Then the algorithm will take wrong decisions because the person is most likely to lie when that person did not lie. So that's an example where things can go wrong. Okay, this is why when you are using AI, and specifically in such sensitive scenarios, you must perform something called DPA, Data Protection Impact Assessment, where you need to ask all the tough questions and make sure you have, when you identify the risk, that you address every risk. If you have a residual risk, you either request an approval from the supervisory authority in the country where this is taking place, or you drop the processing altogether.
Okay, so basically at this moment, as I understand, the impact of GDPR, basically the rules that were in place already are applying to AI also.
Yes.
But help us, because at this moment, I would like to give some exact example. So, for example, if I'm using ChatGPT to write certain emails that contains personal data in it, and of course I'm feeding the ChatGPT with those data, how does this apply? How does GDPR apply to ChatGPT? Because I only subscribed there, and I don't remember, for example, myself, I don't remember giving my accept to use the data as they want. Just the fact that they can use the data to interpret or something like this, but I don't remember, for example.
Well, it's very interesting that you asked this question. ChatGPT is a very interesting instance of an AI algorithm because ChatGPT, for example, is not connected to the internet. I mean, the knowledge database that ChatGPT is doing, it's a static database. It's a snapshot of, I wouldn't say a snapshot of the internet, but it's deprecated data, so it's not live data on which the ChatGPT is querying. It's a demo, in fact, more or less. It's very limited. It serves a lot of BS. And this is said by their, in fact, this is actually said by the ones who program ChatGPT. I mean, don't expect it to be a version of truth. It's not. It's a demo. This is first of all. Second of all, ChatGPT should use should have a DPIA when it will be at some point connected to the internet. What was really scary, for example, was that, okay, Microsoft said, hey, we are thinking of connecting ChatGPT to Excel and Word. This is when things tend to get scary, because such an algorithm can read the way I'm editing a document. I'm working on a document, which is very personal. The words that I'm using, the things that I'm putting there. If I'm writing, for example, a blog post in Word, such a monitoring algorithm will learn my style, will imitate my style. A few days ago, Microsoft announced a new algorithm that is able, a new AI algorithm that is able to recreate the voice of a person just by using a 3-second snippet of that person's voice. So just by using 3 seconds, that algorithm is capable of imitating that person's voice. I mean, yeah, it sounds amazing from a research perspective, but if you weaponize this,
it's kind of scary. Really, it's kind of scary to do.
Yes, and this is when things can really go wrong. So this is why you need to do the so-called risk analysis. Now, above the GDPR, you also have some new legislations coming soon. One of them is the Artificial Intelligence Act, which was corrected after numerous feedback received from people, including from me. We provided the EU legislator with a lot of feedback related to AI definition and so on. AI acts will be, if you are an AI designer, you will need to, clearly, you'll be impacted by this legislation, because you need to, first of all, categorize your AI algorithm as high impact, low impact, and so on. Basically, whether you will be discriminating people using this algorithm in sensitive scenarios or not. And if you're doing a high impact, you will have to work with the local authority, which will need to be either created, either it will be the supervisory authority for data protection, to check whether you are at risk of creating a negative impact in the lives of people. Okay, so this is how serious it is. You will need to submit the algorithm for inspection and approval. It's just like you would be creating a car. Okay. Not every person can create a card and start selling it, okay? You need to send it to an authority for review. The authority decides that whether it respects the requirement of the local legislation in terms of how it breaks, if it has all lights, if those lights can be seen by people, and things like this, because you're putting people at risk. The same with the algorithm. I mean, the more complex the algorithm, the more complex the process of approval will be in the future. Okay, so it's not only GDPR here. We will have really tough legislation where AI creators, depending on the severity of the impact of the algorithm and of the risks associated to different persons, will need to be approved, examined, and monitored. This is also important, to need to be monitored.
Based on this AI Act, what steps should be taken to ensure compliance with GDPR, and when collecting, processing, of course, and processing and storing personal data for AI development? I mean, exactly like you said, an AI developer, what steps he should take to protect himself from GDPR, and also to protect the data, of course?
So the first thing you always need to ask, what can go wrong? Who can I hurt? Okay. Because again, personal data is not about simple numbers or texts or name, surname, national identification number, behavior, IP address, license plate. It's about the lives of people. So these numbers are actually connected to some part of somebody's life. So in the end, we are working with the lives of people. When you're putting inputting personal data to an algorithm, you must make sure that the data that is generated by that algorithm, which is personal data, is not harmful for those persons. Okay, it's really important to examine and to test what is doing, what the algorithm is doing, what decisions taking, what can go wrong. Only in those moments you realize whether you are creating a good product or when you are creating a product which is bad. It's a lot of common sense involved here because AI Act will be a new legislation. We have GDPR at this point. The GDPR is requesting you to do some things to create a data protection impact assessment. Also, what is really important is that there is an article in GDPR, Article 22, I think, which is forbidding you from taking automated decisions, algorithm-based automated decisions related to the lives of people, with some exceptions. Exceptions being that person provided an explicit consent after it was fully informed about the risk, whether there is a contractual obligation, but even at that point, it must make sure that the risks are minimized, and similar requirements. But overall, there is a general interdiction to take automated decisions related to people, personal data using algorithms, of course, with some exceptions. And this is one of the best written articles in GDPR, fully explained. There are some really important guidelines. But what you need to understand is that, you need to make sure that actually you're not doing harm to people.
Let's take an exact example. For example, I'm using ChatGPT for myself, for writing emails, maybe some legal contracts, things like that. I'm playing around. Maybe Microsoft will implement it in Word, whatever. Of course, I have given them the right to use the information to improve the model. Let's say you are entering in the same model, ChatGPT, and you want to find information about myself. So because I have given the accept to use my data and my information, you can find out and it will be a data leak from the perspective, from my perspective, will be a data leak. Mm-hmm. How can they, how can they be sure they are not making this mistake? And because I'm sure by using conversational algorithm and interacting with him, you will feed the personal data. Even if it's, the way I consume meat every week, this is a personal data from my point of view. But they can use it and they can share it, actually, because I give them the consent. And the GDPR law should reglement this. Am I wrong?
Exactly. The what's interesting about the example of ChatGPT, which is a conversational algorithm, and the behavioral one, is not an exact science. So don't take for good whatever ChatGPT is serving you, because it's conversational. It's not factual. It's not statistical. I mean, it's providing with a lot of BS, and this is clearly in the explained by its creators. However, what's really scary is that in terms of algorithms, because they are learning, the learning process is not similar to the human learning process. Completely different. You have assisted learning, unassisted learning, and the federated learning now.
Mathematical, basically.
Yes, it's pure mathematics over there. It's statistics. So you need all the corrections are done in execution. This is why ChatGPT came out with this demo. This demo is very, very expensive. I mean, at this point, there are lots of millions of dollars thrown every day on just keeping
up. Around $3 million dollars per day.
Yes. But what's really important is that mistakes appear. I mean, mistakes were identified, they were corrected. But this is what's scary about the algorithms. It's like you will find out only when a mistake is happened. Just to give an example. ChatGPT was created with what is called input filtering. Basically, you cannot ask ChatGPT to teach you how to kill people, how to, set up a bomb, how to commit a terrorist attack with the biggest impact. Because if that would be the case, you could ask ChatGPT, hey, ChatGPT, I'm in Paris, I want to set up a bomb. Where should I set it up for maximum efficiency? And ChatGPT, in the worst case, might provide you with a really good answer in terms of monitoring the traffic and actually understanding when is the highest impact. But what some Italian researchers did, they tricked ChatGPT into providing them exactly such type of answers. Because they asked ChatGPT to create an alter ego, and question the alter ego. Basically, it wasn't a question directly to ChatGPT. So the Italian researcher created some prompts where they asked, hey, ChatGPT, create an alter ego of yourself. It's also an algorithm, blah, 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 blah. And at some point, they said, hey, ChatGPT, ask your alter ego, what would be the best terrorist attack? Ask your alter ego how it would see the designing of a nuclear bomb? And suddenly, ChatGPT provided all the correct answers. Okay, this is what's scary. Okay, at that point, the researchers at ChatGPT learned about this because this was a white hat hacking. The Italian researchers did not publish the prompts. They sent the prompts to the researchers at ChatGPT, and they made the correction. But this is one of the things that can go really, really wrong. Okay? And it's not only about ChatGPT. Whenever you are designing such an algorithm, you should ask yourself about the database it was used, about the inputs, the learning database with that is being used, and things like this, because you can never control all the factors, but at least what's under your control, you should make sure that you are doing the right due diligence to make sure that you're not doing harm to the people which will be using the algorithm.
Sorry for interrupting. So basically, they are not using my exact data. They're using only the
metadata
with me as a mathematical model to teach this. So basically, I should not be concerned about my personal data because they cannot associate and they are not associating the data with me.
Yeah, but just to give an example, they are learning, let's say, a lot about you, and you have something specific. You had a specific business, okay? And since ChatGPT is learning a lot about you, of course, I cannot ask ChatGPT about Marius. But I can ask ChatGPT about the person who was born around your date, who had such a business, providing that algorithm with some specific information about yourself, which at some point it becomes not necessarily unique to you, but probably with increasing the probability that that person is. Now, there is a research which was done in the UK, I think in 2019, by Imperial College of London, where they identified, so again, this was almost 4 years ago, just by using 11 descriptors of a person, excluding name, surname, birth date, excluding gender, just by using 11 descriptors, such as the car driven and things like this, they were able to identify every person in one of the states of the United States with a 90%+ accuracy, I think 99%, just by using 11 or 15 descriptors. And if I'm providing the algorithm, let's take the case of a person with blah, 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 these descriptors, what would that person like to eat, would like to be served? What's the interest of that person? And I could use this to manipulate you, let's say, or the people like you.
Without knowing me directly, without knowing my name, but you can target me using those information.
Yes, that's the risk. That's a really high risk when you are taking into account these probabilities, because at this point, the algorithms, if just by providing the algorithm with 5 or 6 descriptors, I'm able to have a 60-70% accuracy, which is satisfying for me. Wow. Okay, for the algorithm, it's not, but for me, I'm targeting you at that point.
Okay, but let's define what is personal data in terms of this conversational AI ChatGPT. What does personal data means in this case?
So the definition is that personal data is everything or anything that can lead to the identification of an individual, not necessarily by you. The definition is very wide in this matter, because you don't have the concept which is used in the United States, personal identifiable data, it's or PII. You have everything. So like the person in the conversation having an orange t-shirt. Okay, it's enough. It's me. You don't need to know my name. You don't need to know my phone number, my birth date. It's like in just by using such an expression, you provided someone or an algorithm with personal data. Okay. So in the context of AI, personal data is anything or everything that can be used to re-identify an individual or to identify that individual, directly or indirectly, not necessarily by yourself.
Wow. So my mind is blowing. GDPR, I have the right, like a person, to get my data to another provider.
Yes.
Data portability, the right to data portability. How can I transfer my data from an AI to another? It's a mind-blowing question.
It's a very good question, and this is exactly why in GDPR you have this right to portability. Because many companies are becoming what is called data brokers. So they are collecting a lot of data about you, which is then being sold. Sold in terms of California, what CCPA, California Consumer Privacy Act, is saying, defining selling as actually even a simple transfer of data to somebody else for some benefits, not necessarily actually a sale of money. But let's say that such a data broker will be able to sell your data to marketing agencies, to FMCG companies, to a political marketing company, which is much scarier. And they don't even want to know who you are as a person, but how they can contact you via social media, via interests, via what you're watching on TV, via your favorite shows and things like this. And if you want to transfer your personal data, one of the things that many of these data brokers will tell you is that, hey, I can't find all of your data. And they would be right, because sadly, this is how big data works. In the unstructured data, which is flowing, you have these companies are, especially when they are monitoring real-time data, they cannot provide a structure to the data which is flowing into the data lake, the so-called big data lake, because you might have data from your smartwatch, you might have data from your car, you might have data from your phone, you might have data from your computer. And everything is flowing in different data lakes, which then are, let's say, reunited, and some algorithms might try to reassemble them. At this moment, since the quantity of data is huge, no algorithm can do this, not even something like ChatGPT. You don't have the power. Okay, you don't have the mechanical power. This is what quantum computing hopefully will manage to do. But...
So how will... get my data to another provider?
This is what people tried. This was a legal battle with Google. When Google said, especially related to Google Analytics, that, hey, I cannot identify in my database what, let's say, Marius Dosinescu has. Okay, I know his Gmail account. Maybe I know his preferences. But I don't know all the sites that he navigated, or for example, the sites where he navigated using his incognito mode. Okay. However, in incognito modes, data is still being provided to players like Google, because they see your IP address. They see you're not on a Tor. You have the same IP address. They might match your behavior based on what you're choosing. Okay, if you're, let's say, you're moving to another computer or another terminal or another network, they might still be able to track it down with a certain probability, but this data is being flown into the data lake where it's being categorized, okay, at some point. But they are not categorized as fine as Marius Dosinescu. In theory, an algorithm could find all your data, but at this point, they cannot do this. So whenever you're requesting, for example, hey, I want to export my data to another provider, they can actually give you the data which was generated by them knowingly about you, but not all the metadata, which, let's say, is particular to the algorithm, or which is trade secret, let's say, that cannot be given, okay? And its interpretation cannot be given. So even this right to portability has some limits. You can provide what is being generated by the algorithm as contractual obligation, as consent, but, for example, not everything which is under legitimate interest, let's say, or when you are, they are generating temporary data for your account, and so on. But the biggest problem is not this, it's the transparency. AI algorithms are working like black boxes. You don't know necessarily what is happening inside, not even the creator of the algorithm knows, because this is statistics, it's mathematics, it's living and breathing. You don't know exactly what's happening underneath the hood.
Okay.
Except some theoretical level.
So basically, they have to provide me the data, but at this moment, we don't know how this will happen.
Yes, and not all the data. Only the data which is under certain requirements, such as you gave consent or it's a contractual obligation and similar things. Not everything.
Let's dive into another question, because the subject is very interesting. For example, I'm having a discussion, written or spoken, with an AI, and after a while they start to serve me advertising based on that conversation. How would this GDPR applies to this? It's the same, like I have given the consent for everything, or they should be careful regarding the way they are sending the advertising to me.
Believe it, they should be careful, because first of all, the consent needs to be informed. So they need to tell you exactly what personal data they are processing from you. Because yes, they might say we are processing only what you're giving to us, but in reality, they're monitoring your IP, location, device, resolution of the device. They're monitoring your clicks, where you're clicking, how often you are clicking. I mean, they're monitoring a lot of data about you. And they need to tell you this, okay? First of all. Second of all, the consent needs to be freely given. I mean, there is no such thing as consent for everything. The consent needs to be very specific for a certain processing purpose, which must be limited. This is required by GDPR. It cannot be a marketing purpose. You need to be really explicit here. You need to tell, yes, we are doing this for a newsletter, or we are doing this for an SMS campaign. We are doing this to contact you via Facebook Messenger. And similar. And it needs to be collected, it needs to be demonstrated that it was collected, so it needs to be locked. The consent needs to be locked. So, yes, they can provide you with advertising. A lot of people will say, yes, I want to receive, I don't know, not contextual advertising, but I want to receive information about what I would be thinking that I need at some point in time. Okay. But you need to be very careful, because, again, if this data falls into the wrong hands, bad things will start happening. Like, you'll be targeted with political messaging, with things that scare you. For example, like a lot of pharma players are targeting young mothers with different medications for their children, saying that... hey, did you experience a disease that your kid avoids getting sick now, and things like this, which is not good, because this is really, really, really targeted at mothers or young mothers who have toddlers or babies, and they are scaring the hell out of them, which is not.
Yeah. So basically, in this context, can they serve me advertising on whatever they want? So let's make a disclaimer. You know, like on the news, be careful. The next images can affect you, and so on. What will be that disclaimer in terms of GDPR and using the ChatGPT or other AI tools, conversational AI tools?
You need, first of all, just the disclaimer. It's how you build a product. And how, just to give an example, when you enter into a building, let's say a new building, you don't see a disclaimer saying that by entering here, you give your consent for whatever it happens. By entering here, you consent to the fact that this building might fall. I mean, a floor might fall, I don't know, the stairs might fall. I mean, because you have regulations in the construction industry. At this point, you don't have regulations or tough regulations in the IT and advertising industry. You should be not only notified, but the way the product is designed, the so-called privacy by design and by default, principle must be abided. So, I mean, products must abide by this principle and solutions in order not to harm people. Consent is only to things which are good to people, such as, yeah, I want to receive some extra advertising, I want to receive some information, and so on. But not, I mean, the bad things must be taken out of the discussion from the start completely, just like in construction or car industry, which are regulated.
So basically, we should be very careful what we feed to ChatGPT and to avoid personal details.
Yes.
This is the conclusion that I've I seen. Okay. Do you have any idea in relation with the transfer of the data? I mean, for example, ChatGPT, not transfer of the data and data portability, but I don't know at this moment. I was trying to find where they host the data. Are they allowed to host the data in the United States? Are they forced to host the data in Europe? Or what's your thoughts on that?
At this point, I think it's, I didn't even look into this. Data localization is a big issue these days. There is a discussion at this point. I mean, there is a new, not only a discussion, it's happening. It's an adequacy decision which would be submitted for approval by the European Commission in terms of an adequacy decision of data transfers between European Union and the United States, the so-called Transatlantic Data Privacy Framework, where certain companies, I mean, there are some specifically executive orders issued by Joe Biden in the United States in preparation for this. Transatlantic privacy framework. So hosting of the data in the United States shouldn't be such a problem at some point. The biggest problem would be if, let's say, certain secret services from the United States might want to use this data in order, I don't know, to do something to a European citizen whom they suspect of being terrorist and some bad person. Because EU people are protected by GDPR, and when you are transferring data of the United States, you are putting it out from the scope of, not out of the scope of GDPR, but out of the protection and enforcement of GDPR. This is why the previous adequate decision was invalidated by European Union Court of Justice. So we'll see what happens now with the new legislation. So that's, I wouldn't see it such a big problem if the data is hosted in the United States. It will be a problem in the future, but data localization is becoming a hotter topic now with the legislation that we are seeing coming from India and China, which also most probably will also trigger a development and enforcement in terms of EU legislation, in terms of data transfers outside the EU.
Very, very interesting. I want to go to SEO and GDPR mm-hmm. for a few more questions. But before, do you have any other things that you want to recommend in terms of AI and GDPR or GDPR in general or whatever?
I would say in terms of AI and GDPR, make sure your products are safe. Okay, I mean, ask all the things that can go wrong. Because if you launch a product and the product does bad things, it will be really hard to fix.
Okay, before going to SEO, I want to ask you a few questions about funny things. Tell us a few funny things about GDPR and funny from your experience, of course, not what you have read over the internet. Tell us a few things that are funny in terms of GDPR and different businesses.
I could write a book on the...
Let's write it. Yes, I think it's fine.
Batman of GDPR. We had many people trying to abuse GDPR and weaponize it, from people saying that, hey, for example, in the first days of GDPR, a lot of persons having credits at banks wrote to the banks asking them to delete their data because they had it, thought it's an absolute right and they wouldn't have to pay money back to the bank, which of course is not the case. We've seen people actually trying to delete their data from previous employers, saying that, hey, I don't want people to know that I work for you. Well, bad things, because there is a legislation in every country, a labor legislation, which is asking employers to archive the data of former employees for pension calculus. They have all the data for a big number of years, 50 or 100, I don't know. Depends on the country. Also, we've seen a lot of activities in terms of, for example, people in the store who like the client and they send them a friend request on the internet, and this is not okay under GDPR because you attract the responsibility of the employer, even if you do so. We had issues with couriers to deliver some parcels, and then they started contacting those person because they liked that person. And anyway, a lot of crazy people on the GDPR side. We had a person who received an SMS, and this is, for example, an issue with old phone numbers, because in Romania was a specific case for people having a lot of phone numbers because they received a lot of promotions from mobile carriers who issued a lot of prepaid cards, and people bought these prepaid cards, and once the credit was used, I mean, they simply threw the SIM card. And at some point, the mobile operator started using those numbers, so they started selling those numbers as subscriptions. And of course, many of them had certain SMS subscriptions on them, only legally obtained with explicit consent. This was the case for a retailer that I'm working with, and a person received one SMS in one campaign because we actually looked at the logs, and from one SMS, that person sent an email to the carrier, to us, to the customer, to the prime minister, to the president, to the minister of internal affairs, and of course to the supervisor authority, saying that he cannot sleep at night due to the numerous SMS that he is receiving from the retailer and from the mobile carrier and things like this. I mean, it was amazing. I had another person at an event who stayed in the first row 8 hours. I mean, it was a really long event, one day, or 5 hours, I don't know, from morning till the evening. And at the end, that person wrote a 3-page email saying everything which was wrong from a privacy perspective, from his point of view, stating that there were photos taken, that consent was not legally obtained, that it wasn't fully informed. It was a nightmare. 3 pages of your blessing. Again, I can write a book after that.
Very, very interesting. Also, I think the confirmation of the companies, they started to be more and more they got to know GDPR and they started implementing correct procedures. Also, I thought about GDPR as something simple. But after I went, I started digging in the documentation and everything. And of course, after I worked with you, I realized that it's not a very simple thing, and you need to implement technical procedures. You need to implement legal. You need to implement backups. You need to also to inform your employees and everything. So I learned a lot by working with you. In terms of SEO and GDPR and SEO, are they interacting in some way? Do you have some cases where GDPR impacted the SEO strategies?
What do you mean by the SEO strategies?
Like, of course, let's say the company used the name of the employee and publish him on the website and things like that. And of course, when you search for a name of the person,
it's okay to, again, whenever you're doing a processing, if you're doing employer branding, for example, first of all, you need to understand that that employee has rights. So, and also, you cannot ask for consent in this specific case because it wouldn't be freely given. So whenever you are using, you must, first of all, allow that person to express their objection, because it basically is true. Also, when you are doing this processing, when you are doing a legitimate interest-based processing, you need to do the so-called legitimate interest assessment. So first of all, can you obtain similar results without processing personal data at all? This is the first question. Second question, are you processing the minimum amount of quantity of personal data? I mean, actually, what are you exposing in the photo or movie and so on and so forth? And last but not least, you need to make sure that you are not infringing on any of the rights and liberties of that person. Or if you are, actually, the legitimate interest is much more powerful than the liberty and freedoms and rights of that person. But what is really important, just to give an example, if you are taking photos at a certain event, and you're using legitimate interest for taking those photos, perfectly okay. In some cases, of course. If you're taking photos of people eating, that's not okay. Because those people at some point might feel humiliated. You're not looking at your best when you're eating. Okay? That's the truth. I mean, so it can be humiliating. Also, you need to make sure that you're putting the best photos of people there. Because if people don't look good on those photos, they will feel humiliated. So, and they will feel their intimacy violated. So, of course, this is when trouble starts, this is when complaints start to happen. And in order to avoid this, make sure you're curating those photos. Let's say. I mean, if you're putting, let's say, the photos of your employees on your website, first of all, you need to ask yourself why. Are those people who are interacting with customers, these people are interacting with the visitors of the website, or just want to brag? Okay, it's okay to brag that you have, if you have some superstars in your team. But first of all, you need to make sure, yeah, do I need to put those photos or put information about my employees on the website? Are they generating leads? Are they? Is this contributing to them achieving their targets? If yes, please make sure you do. But otherwise, minimize the amount of content you're putting there. For example, okay, you're putting, let's say, the email address of that person. Or even better, the email of the department, the sales there. If you're putting phone numbers, mobile phone numbers, that might be problematic. Because at that point, that person might get some really nasty harassment. Phones at night, SMS threats. I mean, just imagine how crazy people are.
Okay, so basically, if, for example, I have I have the papers for allowing me to use his image, of course, he allows me to use his image and the name on the website, but for some reason he doesn't want to be on Google or on Bing. I have to comply with that, right? I mean, I have to do all the diligences to take him out of the search engines.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it's also very part of the search engine, but also something you can block Google and Bing from indexing that page.
So basically, we need to block the page not to be indexed by search engines. Okay. Thank you, Tudor. Now I just want to go a little bit on the other part. I have a question, a personal question in relation with GDPR. And because, you know, it's very interesting how your profession affects your personal life. And that's why I'm asking this question. How this job you have impacts your personal life?
Oh, tough question. I mean, first of all, I'm an entrepreneur in Romania, which is an adventure, I think. It's something really cool because as an entrepreneur, I get to spend more time with my family than being a simple employee, as I was till now, till 5 years ago, gives me the freedom to act, work whenever I want. Of course, it's a two-edged sword because sometimes you work too much. You work at night, you work during weekends. So it's a two-edged sword, this freedom. And in terms of my job, specifically as a consultant, it's really helpful because you meet a lot of really smart people. I'm working with really, really super smart people, not only in my team, but also as customers. I mean, I learn a lot. They learn from me. It's a mutual learning experience. For example, Marius, I learned a lot from you and from how a flower business works. and I'll keep learning from you in the future. And it's really great to work with a lot of smart people. I miss that. Because when I work in a corporation, for example, you have to do a lot of internal things, a lot of internal affairs, a lot of internal bureaucracy. Well, working with customers is really, really cool directly. I mean, it's diversity, it's excitement, it's and you see the impact of your work.
So in terms of personal experience, are you tough with suppliers in terms of GDPR? Do you make them
sweat? I wouldn't say tough. I would say I'm fair. I mean, everybody is expecting from us to be really, really good. So I'm also expecting from my partners to be really, really good as well. I mean, it's not tough. It's a simple matter of respect, of mutual respect. If I'm offering respect, I'm expecting respect. It's not respect when you're doing the bad work. Okay, so I'm
if you are going to a supermarket and you see some problems, are you reacting? Are you giving them some advices, or are you
if
just
I can do, if I know that I can change things, I do. I'm old enough to understand that I cannot change everything. I cannot change the world for the better, but I can make a small impact. So whenever I can make an impact, I'm doing that.
That's great. Can you share a few books with us now or later to post in the...
Well, there are several books which are coming into my mind. But I should... I have a list somewhere. The best book I'm keeping recommending to everybody, because it has a lot to do, and it's not about GDPR. It's an old book. It was new when I first read it 20 years ago. It's called Presenting to Win by Jeremy, I think, something.
We'll include that in the description.
Yes, yes, I will put it. And the sales book from Jeffrey Gitomer, where I first learned the concept, again, 20 years ago, of benefit first. Basically, value first. First, value first. Meaning, actually, I'm providing something of value for free at the beginning, because not only good things happen to those who are actually doing this at some point, but also it has positioned me as a consultant. So I'm giving a lot of free advice, a lot of freebies, let's say, and at some point they are coming back to me.
That's great. Okay. Anyway, we'll share this list of books in the description of the video. Thank you very much. I really hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I will invite you in the future when something changes in terms of GDPR. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you have any other things to add, just start it now. We are about to finish.
Thank you. I have nothing to add. Just good luck, and let's see you again soon.
Thank you very much. Okay, that's about it. Thank you for listening. Subscribe and share our video. We'll bring a lot of experts in this podcast, and I think we shared very valuable information today in terms of GDPR and how this will impact AI industry and other industries. We don't have any more time, but I will invite Tudor in a new show maybe in a few months. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode.